Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast. This is your host, Jamil Hassan, the crypto hipster, and I bring you the Crypto Corner, where I interview founders, entrepreneurs, thought leaders, visionaries, artists, musicians in crypto and blockchain globally, you name it, I interview them. We have amazing podcasts. And I have an amazing guest today. Her name is Liz Yang. She is a member of the growth team. She's responsible for ecosystem development, and she's the NFT lead at Definity. Liz, welcome to the show today.
Hi there. Thanks. It's so great to be on.
Awesome. Pleasure to have you. So let's kick things off. And I'll ask, what is your background, and is it a logical background for what you're doing now?
Absolutely. So I started out my career working at Goldman Sachs in asset management and very quickly became disillusioned with our current financial system and its inefficiencies. And from there, I was looking to do something with a bit more impact. I found a job working for a startup in Berlin in the role of venture development. And while I was living in Berlin, I was really bitten by the crypto and blockchain bug. This was around 2017 when there was the whole ICO mania. Despite the hype, I decided to look more into it and became just really fascinated by the possibilities of what a Web3 future could enable.
Awesome. Yeah, I was at AIG for a long time, so it's not hard to be disillusioned by Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, no, totally get that.
So let me ask you this then. Also, what is Definity as an organization, and you know, what has been your primary focus, and especially recently?
Completely. So Definity is a Swiss-based not-for-profit that incubated and launched the internet computer. So that's the fastest and only infinitely scalable general-purpose blockchain for building Web3 applications. So now that the internet computer has been launched, growth is a shared responsibility. So, you know, here at Definity Foundation, everybody continues to work like crazy to onboard developers, propose new features and upgrades, listen to the community and their needs. We're onboarding a lot of builders and dev teams to build out super innovative use cases for Web3. For me, my primary focus, other than helping us launch the internet computer last year as one of the earliest employees at Definity Foundation, was to shift my focus to something that I'm personally really passionate about, which is NFTs. And, you know, if you consider 2020 to be the year of DeFi, last year was amazing because NFTs really became a household name. And even in the tail end of the year, DAOs became a household concept as well, at least in the United States, with this whole news around Constitution DAO farming to purchase a copy of the Constitution from auction at Sotheby's.
Yeah, I agree. And something else that popped up in 2021 was when I was looking at Coinbase one day, this token called Internet Computer, which I hadn't heard of before, popped up. Right. And apparently, it's a very deep protocol. There's a lot of people working on it. So I wanted to find out, what is Internet Computer, the protocol, the token, how's it all work?
That's a great question. So the Internet Computer is the computational strata for an interoperable Web3 enabled future. So with the Internet Computer protocol, developers can build apps that are truly decentralized from end to end, as well as take advantage of low cost decentralized storage. And I think what is most interesting as well is that there aren't gas fees for users, and there are very, very low gas fees for developers. So the concept of a world computer originated from the Ethereum ecosystem, where Dominic Williams, who's our founder and chief scientist here at Definity Foundation, assembled this amazing team of world-renowned cryptographers and distributed systems engineers and programming language experts to tackle the massive challenge of building what we call an internet computer powerful enough to support infinitely scalable Web3 applications.
Like what?
Like what kind of applications can exist?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sure. So if you think about like the applications that exist in today's internet, all of that is possible. And I also think that there are a lot of use cases that are going to come in the future that we haven't even thought of yet, in the same way how in the early days of the internet, I think for a lot of people, they were basically thinking that it was maybe a bit frivolous. It's like, you know, there's like gambling, there's pornography, but, you know, what is this all really going to be used for? And I think that it wasn't if you think about the applications that we use the most today, you know, social media applications, things like Uber, those things were just unfathomable in the early 90s, right? Because you required a computer, you know, your mobile phone, something that you can take around with you, geolocation, Bluetooth, and all of these things. So I think that's one of the really, really interesting aspects of my job. It's like, for me, Web3 is not just about porting existing Web2 applications over onto this new form of technology. It's also like, what could exist out there that hasn't even been invented yet and that no one's talking about?
Yeah, I grew up in the early 90s, when I was an early adult in the early 90s, I was using Blockbuster Video. So a lot of things have changed.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, like, you think about how quickly things have changed in just like the past 10 to 20 years, right? These apps that we use in our everyday lives, like, you know, social media, like e-commerce, the cloud, a lot of these things didn't even exist. If you look, you know, 10 years back, which is super crazy to think about.
Right. And according to Internet Computer, the internet today is, what is the internet today, actually, you know? And how has it been transformed from the original version of what it was supposed to be?
Yeah, that is a fantastic question. And it's something that I love talking about. So, you know, if you go on crypto Twitter, you'll see a lot of people making reference to Web3. But I think for newcomers, maybe to the space, they don't really understand the context of what that is. You know, like, what is, if there's Web3, then like, what's Web1 or what's Web2? So the way I think about it is that Web 1 was the read-only version of the web, the first iteration of the web, which consisted mostly of sites serving static content, like text and images, without a lot of richness or interactivity. And I would say the main players then were mostly developers, and you're like creating like a site via GeoCities or whatever it might be. The next stage is Web 2, which is what is called the read or write web. So this is the iteration of the web most people are familiar with. So you don't have to be a developer to be able to participate in this version of the web. So, you know, as a user, you can upload content to TikTok or Twitter or Facebook and, you know, potentially have millions of people see it. So the problem here is that value has accrued disproportionately to a handful of tech companies. And this is because of the current incentive structures that exist. So the you know, framework is usually as follows. Like, a company will launch an app with a free product. They'll onboard as many users as possible. And then at some point, they'll have to monetize because, you know, either they've taken venture funding or, you know, they have investors that they have to show results to. And with Web2, there really only are a handful of monetization models, right? So you can sell advertisements or you can sell personal data. And I think we've all seen the dangers of what happens in terms of value accruing to big tech companies in terms of our personal information, because advertisements become increasingly personalized, I think with unintended consequences, especially at scale. So a really good example of this is Cambridge Analytica. A couple of years back, they contributed to targeted advertising to manipulate an election in Trinidad and Tobago. So essentially, there was one political party that created an ad campaign to encourage youth of the opposing party not to vote. But the insidious thing is that they disguised it as a grassroots youth campaign, and it really did influence the results of the election. So to recap, in terms of Web 2, a couple of problems. So number one, value doesn't accrue to the user. So for me as a user, no matter how much I'm using these platforms, like no matter how much time I spend on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook or whatever it might be, like nothing happens to me, right? Like I'm not like earning points. I'm like, there's not really like additional benefits for me. Whereas the platforms which are increasing their user base are able to monetize on the data essentially that we've given them. Number two, this version of the web is centralized, which means that content can be removed and censored at the platform creators, you know, sort of like arbitrary decision. So as a user, I also don't really have a say in terms of if a decision has been made by a platform that I don't agree with, because I have no mechanism of governance or anything like that. And then lastly, there are a lot of privacy issues because users don't control their data. And I think we've all seen the headlines around privacy breaches and so on and so forth. So that brings us to Web3 today, which is what is called like the read, write, own web. So Web3 applications run on decentralized networks of many nodes. They run on the blockchain. Where cryptocurrency comes in is that it provides financial incentives native to the internet for those who want to participate in this new kind of economy. So for users of these applications, they can not only contribute content, but actually have ownership in the apps and the platforms that they use, which means that value accrues to the user. And the way this works is that on an infrastructure level, there's tokens governing how protocols function. They reward participants at many levels of the network. So if you're like a validator of a node at the protocol level, you're rewarded in tokens. If you're a user, you're also rewarded in tokens as well for using applications through mechanisms like airdrops, which enable you to have tokens representing ownership in the platform, which allows you to have a say in the platform and applications that you use, as well as reap the financial benefits of the appreciation and the token price.
So I'm trying to think here. A couple years ago, I came into crypto in 2017 during the ICO craze. And I had a consulting business. And part of that consulting business, I was using LinkedIn, right, to communicate with people around the world. And I was sending messages through the Instant Messenger, and I thought they were going through, but no one ever responded back. So two years later, I got a list from them. Oh, we're very sorry. This is the messages that didn't go through. I thought it was gonna be like five or three. Oh, no. It was 4,000. Right. So they just like that impacted my business as an entrepreneur. So
absolutely.
So my question this for you is how, like, we're talking at the high level here, right? How in practical reality has Web2 and the job of the impact of these big tech corporations impacted and harmed startup entrepreneurs who wouldn't otherwise know they were being harmed?
That's an excellent question. There are a lot of examples of this, and I think that the biggest example for me is the fact that a lot of these big tech companies can change, you know, things, fundamental things about their product, upon which founders and entrepreneurs have built their companies. So, for example, you know, big tech companies can revoke APIs. They can change algorithms, for example, like SEO rankings, which fundamentally alter the prospects, I think, of companies that have been built that under, you know, a certain set of assumptions. So the reason why I think that Web3 is very, very promising for builders and entrepreneurs alike is because for the first time, you know, through this ownership economy through tokens, you're able to actually have a say in terms of product decisions instead of being a passive recipient of what product decisions these big tech companies make. And they, you know, may or may not have your best interests at heart.
So you're really controlling your own destiny if you go, by going web with Web 3.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I definitely think that's one of the main benefits of Web 3 compared to Web 2.
Awesome. So de-risking platform risk.
Exactly. I think for a lot of builders and entrepreneurs today, if you're building using, you know, a Web 2 kind of stack, it's like building on sand because you don't really know when the rug is going to be pulled from underneath you. And you can see a lot of examples of this, right? Like for most, you know, founders and developers who start companies, they typically need to rely on some kind of centralized cloud solution like AWS. But the thing is, you know, what if you live in a country where you're trying to get some like information out there, but there is a repressive government that's in power that contacts, you know, the decentralized cloud providers, and they tell these companies to take your content down. I think especially when you live in a place like the United States, you like fail to think about how these possibilities can exist in autocratic governments or countries ruled by autocratic governments around the world. But you know, when you're building upon Web3 and you're hosting content in a decentralized fashion, it becomes impossible for these kind of situations to occur.
Got it.
And for me, one really interesting example of this is that in some countries, Wikipedia is banned, right? And in the country of Turkey, I think somebody uploaded like the entire repository of Wikipedia to IPFS, which is a decentralized file storage solution, which means that, you know, even in countries where something like Wikipedia might be banned, you're still able to access this information and circumvent the existing government.
Interesting.
It's really fascinating.
It is. So let's look at, I want to focus a little bit on growth. You're part of the growth team at Definity.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's look at something that could be considered growth or business development. Let's look at Terabithia, right? It's a new bridge. How does it work? What are the global benefits of it?
So Terabithia is an ETH ICP bridge built by former Consensus Alums at Psychedelic DAO. So I think something that's really interesting about this is that essentially you're able to wrap Ethereum tokens and bring them over to ICP. So if you're familiar with Ethereum and you know how much things cost in Ethereum, making a simple Uniswap making a simple swap on Uniswap could incur fees that are like hundreds of dollars of worth of gas, right? And I think that if we're looking for mainstream adoption of crypto, that's simply not feasible because that's like way too expensive to transact. That being said, you know, I myself am a member of the Ethereum community and I'm a really, really big fan of the vibrancy of the culture and all of the different innovative use cases that exist upon Ethereum. For me, this ETH ICP bridge represents the best of both worlds. You're able to wrap tokens, like Ethereum tokens, and bring them over to ICP, which means that you're able to capture just like the size and liquidity of the Ethereum ecosystem, but also have some of the technical benefits of ICP, such as a low gas costs. And something I wanted to note as well is that bridges like Terabithia are separate from this native Ethereum and ICP integration that's going to happen later this year from the Definity Foundation. So with the native Ethereum and ICP integration, what that means is that you actually don't need to wrap Ethereum tokens to bring them over to ICP and then unwrap it when you bring it back to Ethereum. It's just like completely end-to-end integrated.
Awesome. And I wanted to do the bridge because I wanted to bridge from the conversation of, you know, the Web3 to the conversation of NFTs, which is your area, right?
Yeah, completely.
So coming soon, right? Coming soon, meta sports, NFT, fantasy basketball. Sounds exciting to me. I've been in fantasy football for 20 years.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I want to find out how this is going to work. And you're the person to talk to. How it's going to work. If it's successful, how else are you going to build NFTs, focus on, you know, what's your area? What's going on?
Yeah, definitely. So as we saw last year, it really was the year of NFTs, right? Like if you look at an NFT marketplace like OpenSea, I think they do like over $1 billion worth of sales every month, which is like a multiples, which is like a huge increase in terms of like comparing to the kinds of sales they did even like 1 year earlier. So, you know, moving back toward meta sports, Psychedelic DAO, which is the DAO I mentioned earlier that's responsible for building out Terabithia, announced the launch of Metasports Basketball, which is a really interesting concept around NFT-based fantasy sports, allowing users to port existing NFT collectibles to be able to mint in-game characters. So what that means is that if you're the owner of an NFT from collections like Bored Ape Yacht Club, Mutant Apes, Cool Cats, Clonex, and so on and so forth, you're actually able to use your existing NFTs to be able to mint interesting collectibles and utilize them in game. The reason why that's interesting is because there are different use cases for NFTs, right? I mean, like the entire universe of use cases for NFTs, I think, is far broader than that of just like art and collectibles and gaming. For me, NFTs is just like simply like a file format, right? And I think there are a lot of applications for things like NFTs, which are maybe a bit more quotidian, you know, like for use in like vaccine passports or identity and authentication, I think make a lot of sense for NFTs. But as it is right now, I think the early stage use cases for NFTs are a bit more focused in the world of like art collectibles and gaming. But yeah, it's really interesting because if you're the owner of something like a Cool Cat, it's not just going to be, you know, some static image that you have, you know, in your wallet. It's something that you're able to use as your avatar, essentially, in metasports. And something interesting as well around metasports too is that I'm a really, really big believer in the future being multi-chain. So with metasports, the game uses Ethereum as the base asset layer for these NFTs, but it also uses Starknet as an orchestration and game reward layer, and also the internet computer for gameplay logic and low value transactions, and also IPFS as a storage redundancy layer. So it's like, I think in the crypto space, you tend to see a lot of tribalism, you know, like people want to secure their bag or whatever it might be, and they're like maximalists for their own token or their own community. But, you know, even with something like Ethereum, which I'm like a huge, huge fan of, I think it's undeniable that there are, you know, issues in terms of it being super expensive, it, you know, not being as high throughput as it could be, and so on and so forth, where if you're able to capture, again, the size of the ecosystem and all of the great things that exist around the ecosystem, but you're able to supplement that with other chains, I think that's a really, really interesting kind of solution.
Tribalism is a whole, I can hold a whole entire podcast on tribalism. a lot of, you know, it's easier to understand one thing than it is to understand a whole bunch of things. So luckily, I get to speak with people like you who are all from all different, you know, all different areas. So I can learn a lot. But so you guys have so what if non-fungible token weren't non-fungible token? What if it were non-fungible ticket? Then what would be possible?
Yeah, completely. So are you saying that like you're representing a ticket as an NFT essentially, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean that actually kind of already exists. Like during NFT NYC, which is the biggest NFT conference in the world held in New York City, there are a lot of private events where you had to show that you held a certain NFT in your wallet to be able to attend. And, you know, because of the nature of the blockchain, you can't really fake something like that. So while events are like one particular use case, I think something else that's really interesting is like, what if you're like, you know, passport, you know, like what if your driver's license, what if all of these government documents could just exist as NFTs? Because I don't know about you, but I'm like, whenever there's a situation where I need to find like my birth certificate or something, I just like have no idea where it is. Right. And for me, just the idea of NFTs being something that like are traceable through the design, through its technical design and being unique, I think we'll have really, really interesting like non-art applications going forward.
So one of the benefits of NFTs for the basketball game was to have an in-game character, but let's look at a real life character. Let's look at Paris Hilton, right? There was an announcement from November 2021 that Polychain Capital, along with Paris Hilton, invested, you know, in the Origin Foundation. How has that worked? How's that come so far? And how does the Origin relationship with internet computer work?
Yeah, Origin is one of the earliest projects to build on the internet computer. You know, among many like super talented developers and builders. But yeah, Origin has mobilized the luxury watch industry and is expanding into other luxury sectors. And honestly, it's no surprise at all that I think they got the valuation that they had with the investor backing that they had. I actually think this also might be Bill Ackman, who's like a big shot hedge fund manager on Wall Street. I think this might be his first crypto investment as well. For somebody like Paris Hilton, I think not a lot of, you know, people might not necessarily know this, but Paris Hilton is like one of the crypto OGs. I think even like 5 years back, she's been a big backer of crypto projects, like a big early supporter of Ethereum, big early supporter of NFTs. So I definitely think that she has the nose, so to speak, for these like interesting early stage projects.
I did not know that. That's interesting. I did not know that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. She's been like a big crypto supporter very, very, very early on at a time when like nowadays, I think, you know, it's in vogue to support crypto or blockchain, hold some Bitcoin in your portfolio, buy NFTs. But I remember a time, like when I first started working at Definity Foundation, a lot of my friends were like, oh, crypto, blockchain, you know, isn't that like really risky? You know, isn't that really just used for like, you know, black market transactions and so on and so forth. So it didn't always seem like a surefire thing. So that's why it's additionally impressive that somebody like Paris Hilton would stake her reputation on supporting something that didn't seem like a sure bet early on.
Interesting. So when you look at her, you look at people like Bill Ackman, you look at VCs, you look at a lot of money, right? And you look at, you know, a structure like your structure, you know, with the voting, trying to and looking to be fully decentralized, you know, is there a conflict there? How could traditional governance and voting work if there's heavy VC money? How do you keep things fair? So that's just how do you do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So going back to what I was saying earlier, the whole thing about Web3 is user ownership or community ownership. And I think what is super interesting about the internet computer in particular is that we have this decentralized method of governance through something called the network nervous system or the NNS. So what that means is that in terms of voting for big governance decisions, like the direction of the project, like features in our roadmap and things of that nature, people from our community can submit proposals completely on chain, and we're able to vote completely on chain as well. As long as you have what is called a neuron, which is ICP staked for a period of at least 6 months. And the reason why this is a criterion is because we want to incentivize, it's like, you know, you can't vote in local elections unless you live in a city, right? Because you want to make sure that the people participating in governance are people whose long-term incentives are aligned with the success of, you know, whatever it is that you're voting about. Similarly, for people to be able to vote in a decentralized fashion for the in internet computer governance proposals, you have to take some ICP. It can be any amount, and stake it for at least a period of 6 months. But like I mentioned, community members can submit proposals. Community members are the ones who are voting. I think it's really, really cool to be able to do this on chain in a transparent and decentralized fashion. And it's certainly something that sets apart the internet computer.
Sounds like it. That's awesome. Yeah, I loved our conversation. This has been great. It's been an honor speaking with you. I enjoyed it a lot, and I do have one further question. And it's an easy one. It's, how can people find out more information about you, about Definity, about Internet Computer? How can they do that?
Yeah, so I think the best way to keep track of everything that's happening is by following Definity on Twitter. So that's just at Definity, D-F-I-N-I-T-Y. And you can also keep track of what I'm up to on Twitter as well, at Wiz Wang, that's W-H-I-Z-W-A-N-G. But it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for the wonderful questions.
You're very welcome. Have a great day. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you. Bye now.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter at Irish_Tech News, on Facebook, facebook.com/Irish Tech News, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.